Hello, this is Beatrice Pavia with part one of the pantograph of Friday, July 31st, 2020. Let's take a look at the front page. The main story is a big one that's local, headlined, McLean County adds 18 cases, crosses the 500 mark. And it is accompanied by two photos of healthcare workers administering swab tests to a line of cars that have come to a testing site. And one of the captions reads, "A worker hands off a nasal swab to a person going through the COVID-19 testing site outside First United Methodist Church at 201 North Chestnut Street in Leroy on Thursday. The testing site was open from 9 a.m. to noon, and it's part of McLean County's outreach to offer mobile testing sites in Leroy, as well as Colfax and Hayworth, during the next 2 months. The next scheduled mobile site is August 6th at the Randolph Township Fire District headquarters at 103 South Buchanan Street in Hayworth." And the story goes on to read, "Officials say that public fear may lead to social stigma for patients." And this story is Dateline Bloomington. The total number of reported COVID-19 cases in McLean County since the pandemic started surpassed 500 Thursday, with the local health department confirming 18 new cases. The last 7 months have been a stressful time for people and communities coping with uncertainties and change due to the COVID-19 pandemic, McLean County Health Administrator Jessica McKnight said in a statement on Thursday. "Fear and anxiety about a disease can lead to social stigma, which is negative attitudes and beliefs toward people, places, or things." And as of Thursday, the number of infections stood at 504. A total of 409 have recovered. McLean County Health Department and Chestnut Health Systems opened its second mobile COVID-19 testing site Thursday in Leroy. The site, which will travel between Colfax, Leroy, and Hayworth during the next 2 months, attracted a number of area residents. "It was a good turnout," said David Hopper, McLean County Health Department Emergency Preparedness Coordinator. "The communities have been very receptive to it. The turnout this week was better than last, and we'll continue to go up as we continue testing." 71 people were tested Thursday at the Leroy location. The mobile testing sites are funded through a $2.8 million state grant, which is also covering increased contact tracing. The first site was opened in Colfax on July 23rd, and 35 people were tested. A record-setting 622 people were tested Wednesday at the COVID testing site at the McLean County Fairgrounds, said the McLean County Emergency Management Agency. The previous record set Tuesday was 606 tests in 1 day. Wednesday was the third consecutive day for administering a record-breaking number of coronavirus tests in 1 day, the Emergency Management Agency said. Of the 504 cases of COVID-19 reported in McLean County since March 19th, 77 people are isolating at home and 3 people are hospitalized. There have been 15 COVID-related deaths. The cumulative positivity rate is 2.1% and the rolling 7-day positivity rate is 1.8% through Tuesday, health officials said. The Illinois Department of Public Health announced 1,772 new COVID-19 cases and 18 additional deaths, and there have been a total of 176,896 cases in Illinois and 7,478 deaths. In Tazewell County, health officials confirmed Thursday 21 new cases of coronavirus, bringing the county's total to 322. Of those, 220 are considered recovered, 87 are at home in isolation, and 7 are hospitalized. the county's health department said Thursday, was the largest daily increase since March. Additionally, 12 Bradley University students, including some who attended a social gathering after leading freshman orientation programs this month, have tested positive for COVID-19, the school said. McLean County health officials also released ways to reduce social stigma toward COVID patients and testing as cases continue to rise throughout the county. Health officials warned that increased stigma could discourage people from seeking coronavirus screening, testing, and quarantining. To prevent possible stigma, health officials encouraged people to maintain the privacy and confidentiality of people seeking health care or who are involved in contact investigation, to share accurate information about how the virus spreads, to support healthcare workers, first responders, and others working on the front lines, and to promote resources for mental health or other social support services for people who have experienced stigma or who need assistance. The next front page story is about higher education. It's headlined, IWU Delays Faculty Termination Letters. Nugent says staff needs may change in fall term, 9 jobs affected. This story is Dateline Bloomington. Illinois Wesleyan University is not sending termination notices to faculty affected by recent program changes for at least another month. Those notices to 9 faculty members were expected to go out August 1st, the start of the university's fiscal year. The faculty are being affected by the university board's decisions in May and July to eliminate majors and minors in several liberal arts programs. Given the extreme disruption that the COVID pandemic presents to university planning, we believe it makes sense to see whether the commencement of the academic year next month and the return of students to campus might present us with alternatives we do not have today, IWU President Georgia Nugent said in an email sent to faculty members Thursday afternoon and shared with the Pantograph. The email was sent hours before a planned faculty meeting to consider a resolution drafted by IWU's Council on University Programs and Policy. The resolution called for no termination contracts to be issued until the faculty as a whole has an opportunity to re-envision and restructure offerings. Illinois Wesleyan does not have a faculty senate, but the council is a representative body, said its vice chair, Mike Thune, an English professor. Members wanted to vote on the measure through a secret ballot process that was still underway Thursday night. And in the rationale for the resolution, the council said it believed faculty handbook procedures were not being followed as they related to making every effort to find suitable positions for the affected faculty members. Nugent said after the meeting that the handbook and the American Association of University Professors regulations do not require that a university create a new position. They just require us to try to place a person in a position. But Thune said there is a massive gap between finding an existing vacancy and creating a new position. It's somewhere in that gap that every effort exists, he said. On July 16th, the IWU Board of Trustees voted to end majors and minors in anthropology, religious studies, and French, and the minor in Italian. The decision followed the board's move in May to cut programs in American Culture Studies, Design Technology and Entrepreneurship, Greek and Roman Studies, and International Business. In advance of the board's actions, alumni and others mounted letter-writing campaigns and petitions and staged a rally in support of the liberal arts on the campus quad on July 1st. In Thursday's email, Nugent said, "We plan to use the month of August to continue to engage in earnest discussion and analysis to determine whether changed circumstances at the beginning of the academic year might allow us to identify suitable positions that do not currently exist for some or all of these faculty members. Nugent said after the meeting that there was little discussion of the resolution, and it was more of an opportunity for people to express their views and try to undo what the board already decided. Thune said he was heartened by the opportunity for faculty to express their views on the wrongs that are being done to our fellow faculty. And the next front page story is about COVID and the economy. It's a national story. It's headlined, U.S. Jobs and GDP Fall as Virus Rolls On. Second quarter plunge equal to 32.9% annual rate. This is an Associated Press story out of Washington. The coronavirus pandemic sent the U.S. economy plunging by a record-shattering 32.9% annual rate last quarter and is still inflicting damage across the country, squeezing already struggling businesses and forcing a wave of layoffs that shows no sign of abating. The economy's collapse in the April to June quarter, stunning in its speed and depth, came as a resurgence of the viral outbreak has pushed businesses to close for a second time in many areas. The government's estimate of the second quarter fall in the gross domestic product has no comparisons since records began in 1947. The previous worst quarterly contraction, at 10%, less than a third of what was reported Thursday, occurred in 1958 during the Eisenhower administration. So steep was the economic fall last quarter that most analysts expect a sharp rebound for the current July to September period, but with coronavirus cases rising in the majority of states, the pain is likely to continue and potentially worsen in the months ahead. The plunge in the gross domestic product underscores the unprecedented hit to the economy from the pandemic, said Andrew Hunter, senior U.S. economist at Capital Economics. We expect it will take years for that damage to be fully recovered. And that is because the virus has taken square aim at the engine of the American economy, consumer spending, which accounts for about 70% of activity. That spending collapsed at a 34.6% annual rate last quarter as people holed up in their homes, travel all but froze, and shutdown orders forced many restaurants, bars, entertainment venues, and other retail establishments to close. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed more than 200 points down, though earlier it had seemed set for a much bigger fall. Tentative hopes for a swift recovery have been diminished by a resurgence of viral cases in the South and West that has forced many businesses to close again or reduce occupancy. Between June 21st and July 19, for example, the proportion of Texas bars that were closed shot from 25% to 73%, and likewise, 75% of California beauty shops were shuttered on July 19th, up from 40% just a week earlier, according to the data firm Wamply. The second surge does appear to be leveling off, but cases are still rising in close to 30 states. Many states have imposed restrictions on visitors from the states that have reported high levels of cases, hurting hotels, airlines, and other industries that depend on travel. And that has led to mammoth job losses. In a sign of how weakened the job market remains, more than 1.4 million laid-off Americans applied for unemployment benefits last week. It was the 19th straight week that more than a million people have applied for jobless aid. Before the coronavirus erupted in March in the U.S., the number of Americans seeking unemployment checks had never exceeded 700,000 in any one week, even during the Great Recession. An additional 830,000 people applied for unemployment benefits under a new program that extends eligibility for the first time to self-employed and gig workers, All told, the government says roughly 30 million people are receiving some form of jobless aid, though that figure might be inflated by double counting by some states. The risk of temporary job losses becoming permanent is high from repeated closures of businesses, said Rubila Farooqi, chief U.S. economist at High Frequency Economics. That could result in an even slower pace of recovery. Last quarter's economic drop followed a 5% fall in the January to March quarter, during which the economy officially entered a recession, ending an 11-year economic expansion, the longest on record in the United States. The Trump campaign said in a statement that the GDP report reflected a period when much of the economy was essentially closed down to save millions of American lives. The economic harm from the virus is extending well beyond the United States. On Thursday, Germany reported that its gross domestic product tumbled 10.1% last quarter. It was the biggest such drop since records began in 1970. And Mexico's GDP sank 17.3% last quarter, also a record. Unlike the U.S. figures, those numbers are not annualized rates. And the last front page story is about the 2020 campaign. It's headlined, "Trump Looks at Delaying Fall Election." It's from the Associated Press, and it is datelined Washington. President Donald Trump, lagging in the polls and grappling with deepening economic and public health crises, on Thursday floated the startling idea of delaying the November 3rd presidential election. His campaign to sow doubt about the election's outcome drew immediate pushback from Democrats and Republicans alike in a nation that has held itself up as a beacon to the world for its history of peaceful transfer of power. Trump suggested the delay as he pushed unsubstantiated allegations that increased mail-in voting due to the coronavirus pandemic would result in fraud. But shifting of the election day is virtually impossible, and the very idea represented another bracing attempt by Trump to undermine confidence in the American political system. The date of the presidential election, the Tuesday after the first Monday in November in every fourth year, is enshrined in federal law and would require an act of Congress to change. Top Republicans in Congress quickly rebuffed Trump's suggestion. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said the election date is set in stone, and House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy said the election should go forward as planned. Regardless, the Constitution makes no provisions for a delay in the end of Trump's term, noon on January 20, 2021. With universal mail-in voting, not absentee voting, which is good, 2020 will be the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history, Trump tweeted Thursday. It will be a great embarrassment to the USA. Delay the election until people can properly, securely, and safely vote? After facing blowback from Republicans for even floating a delay, Trump appeared to retreat on Twitter Thursday afternoon, suggesting he was merely trying to highlight alleged problems with mail-in balloting. "Do I want to see a date changed? No," Trump said later during a press conference on the coronavirus response. "But I don't want to see a crooked election." Trump has increasingly sought to cast doubt on November's election and the expected pandemic-induced surge in mail-in and absentee voting. He has called remote voting options the biggest risk to his re-election. His campaign and the Republican Party have sued to combat the practice, which was once a significant advantage for the GOP. In fact, only 5 states conduct elections entirely by mail, although more states expect to rely more heavily on mail-in ballots in November because of the virus outbreak. Experts assess that delays in counting mail-in ballots could mean results will not be known on election day. Trump's suggestion of delaying the vote came just minutes after the government reported that the U.S. economy shrank at a dizzying 32.9% annual rate in the April to June quarter, by far the worst quarterly plunge ever, as the coronavirus outbreak shut down businesses, threw tens of millions out of work, and sent unemployment surging to 14.7%. With just over 3 months until Election Day, Trump trails in the polls nationally and across battleground states, and some surveys even suggest traditionally Republican-leaning states could be in play. While Trump has come back before after trailing consistently in the polls throughout 2016, the survey data has raised the possibility that he could face a landslide loss if he does not turn things around. There is no evidence of widespread voter fraud through mail-in voting, and the states that use it exclusively say they have necessary safeguards in place to ensure that a hostile foreign actor does not disrupt the vote. Election security experts say that voter fraud is rare in all forms of balloting, including by mail. So far, at least 6 states have confirmed that they will send mail ballot request forms to voters, according to the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU's law school. New Mexico has passed legislation so that county clerks may send such forms to voters. California and Vermont will mail ballots to all actively registered voters. And in roughly 36 states and the District of Columbia, officials may not send request forms or ballots to all voters for November. Trump and many members of his administration have previously availed themselves of absentee voting, but Trump has sought to differentiate that from the growing push by states to mail all registered voters either ballots or absentee request forms. And we'll move now to local and state news. This story is headlined, 12 Bradley students test positive for virus after event. It's an Associated Press story, datelined Peoria. A dozen Bradley University students, including some who attended a social gathering after leading freshman orientation programs this month, have tested positive for COVID-19, the school said. After the Peoria school learned of the new cases on July 23rd, it determined after testing and contact tracing that the outbreak apparently stemmed from a small off-campus gathering in which attendees did not wear masks or practice social distancing, Bradley spokeswoman Renee Charles said. Officials said they don't believe it was connected to the orientation sessions that preceded the party. This event highlights the importance of remaining vigilant about engaging in behaviors proven to slow the spread of the virus, Bradley's president, Stephen Standiford, said in a message Monday. Face masks, physical distancing, and frequent hand washing matter. This case also highlights the importance of an aggressive testing and contact tracing routine. Some of the students became infected after attending outdoor and indoor orientation activities on July 20 and 21 at the 5,000-student campus. Attendees who were determined to have spent more than 15 minutes with one of the infected students were notified by a phone call or text message, but school officials said they don't think the risk of transmission was high during the sessions because attendees had to wear masks and adhere to social distancing. The school said it plans to resume in-person classes in late August, but that it is monitoring a recent increase in the number of cases and emergency room visits for COVID-19 symptoms in the Peoria area. Our fall plans, we continue to say, are subject to change, Charles told the Chicago Tribune, noting that the administrators have been meeting regularly to go over various scenarios and the school's policies and procedures. The virus has also led other schools to make changes, including Georgetown University and George Washington University in the nation's capital, which announced this week that they would begin the school year only online, backing away from plans to have at least some in-person classes. And recent Chicago health data also points to another concern for campuses hoping for students to return in the fall. The percentage of cases among people ages 18 to 29 is on the rise. Earlier this month, the city's Department of Public Health said that 29% of the confirmed cases since June 15th were among people in that age group, which was a stark change from May, when cases peaked in the city and overwhelmingly affected older people. And this state story is headlined, State May Restrict Four Counties for COVID. LaSalle, Randolph, Adams, and Peoria eyed. This is from Capital News Illinois, Dateline Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Thursday traveled to two of the four counties in Illinois that are now in danger of having to reimpose economic restrictions because of rising COVID-19 numbers, warning that bars, restaurants, and other businesses could be forced to close again if people do not follow public health guidelines. As much as I would like to, this virus isn't something that we can wish away, Pritzker said at an event in Peoria. So we have to act responsibly and collectively to protect the people that we love. All 102 counties in Illinois are currently in phase 4 of the reopening plan, which means businesses are allowed to operate within public health guidelines, such as capacity limits and face mask requirements, and gatherings of up to 50 people are allowed. Individual regions, however, can be forced to reimpose several restrictions seen in previous phases of the reopening plan if they show increasing positivity rates for 7 out of 10 days and they have a 7-day sustained increase in hospital admissions for COVID-19 or a decrease to 20% capacity of intensive care unit beds. The four counties currently in danger of reaching those metrics are Adams, LaSalle, Peoria, and Randolph. Pritzker was joined at the Peoria event by local legislators, including Democratic Senator David Kaler, who said he was alarmed by reports about public behavior that he'd received from two local businesses. Both of these establishments asked for patrons to wear masks when they come through the door, he said. They have reported that their employees have just been brutalized by some members of the public who think that it's, you know, their right to not to wear a mask. But you have to understand that these are businesses that are trying to protect the public, trying to protect their employees, and they need our help. Speaking later in the day in Ottawa, in LaSalle County, Pritzker delivered a similar message. Both Peoria and LaSalle counties are in Region 2 of the state's virus mitigation plan. Within that region, there have already been 7 straight days of rising positivity rates and 3 straight days of rising hospitalizations. Pritzker said the sources of the rising infection rates in Region 2 appear to be from shopping in big box retail stores, house parties, and workplaces. If hospitalizations in the region continue to rise for 4 more days, Pritzker said, the region will see increased restrictions, which may be tailored locally around the sources of the increased spread. And today's flick fact is, can you name the month of the year in which Illinoisans are, the month of the year in which Illinoisans drive the most? And the answer is, be safe out there. According to National Highway Traffic Safety Administration statistics, August is the month in which we drive most. Across America, August also averages the greatest number of crash deaths, 132 per day. The top 5 deadliest months to drive are August, October, July, November, and September. And this has been Beatrice Pavia with part 1 of the Pantograph for Friday, July 31st, 2020. I look forward to reading part 2 with you soon.